Welcome to Cut and Thrust, your podcast for the bloody and sometimes bizarre journey through the Middle Ages. Whether it's dark battles, questionable hygiene, or hair-raising rulers, here you'll get history as it really was, raw and unfiltered. So grab your sword, put on your helmet, and let's dive into the wild world of the past.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Battle Merchant Podcast. I'm Hendrik.
And I'm Carmen. Today we're talking about a topic that has fascinated me personally for a long time. Saddles. More specifically, the comparison between medieval and modern saddles.
And this is more exciting than it might sound at first, because saddles have changed dramatically over the centuries, and not arbitrarily, but always following function.
Form follows function.
Exactly. And when you look at what a medieval saddle was designed for, it quickly becomes clear why it looks completely different from what we know today.
We're primarily talking about reproductions from the 15th century here, so the late Middle Ages, the heyday of plate armor. And these saddles weren't designed for leisurely rides, but rather
for fighting, in full armor, with a lance. That's a completely different set of requirements.
I still remember when I first sat in one of these reconstructions. It was, well, very unfamiliar at first. The seat is much deeper than modern saddles, and your legs are almost straight.
That's the crucial difference. With modern English saddles, you sit with bent knees, weight more forward. With a medieval saddle, you shift much more weight onto your legs and sit upright.
And there's a very practical reason for that, right?
Absolutely. Imagine you're riding toward an opponent with a couched lance, the so-called couched lance attack. The entire force of the galloping horse is channeled through your body. If you're sitting unstably,
you get thrown off.
At best. The upright position allows you to distribute the impact force through your back and hips. The saddle works together with you.
Then there's also the weight of the armor. With a complete field armor, we're talking about, what, 20 to 30 kilos?
Field battle armor usually fell within that range. Tournament armor could weigh 40 to 50 kilos. The clever thing is that the weight is distributed evenly across the entire body, not concentrated at one point like a backpack.
Still, when you're riding for hours with an extra 25 kilos on your body, you need a seating position that can handle it.
And here comes the surprising part. The medieval saddle has no
soft padding like today. The core was made of solid wood, but covered with leather and padded with wool, straw, or felt. I didn't believe that at first either.
So, a solid wooden core with a leather covering sounds harsh compared to today. But once you get used to it, it works surprisingly well. The weight distribution is designed so that pressure is spread evenly.
It's like, how do I explain this best? Maybe like an ergonomic wooden chair? Not soft, but the shape fits the anatomy.
Good comparison. And it had to be that way, because these riders spent hours in armor. Soft padding that eventually gets compressed wouldn't help. The wood holds up.
What I noticed during reenactment, you simply sit more stable in a saddle like that. This upright position feels stiff at first, but after a while, you notice how much control you have.
That was also vital for survival. The saddle had these large side extensions, historically called the cantle or side plates, nowadays called ears in the community. They support the thighs and prevent you from slipping sideways.
Basically a built-in safety feature.
Together with a high front plate that provides additional stability, the pommel was made of wood and leather. It offered hardly any protection against weapons. The entire saddle was designed to keep you in place during combat, like an armchair on horseback.
That also explains why the stirrups were so important. Without them, you couldn't brace yourself against the backrest at all.
Exactly. Stirrups, deep saddle with high cantle, upright position, couched lance. It's a system. Every element works together with the others.
And this system, it shaped mounted warfare from the High Middle Ages onward. These saddles here are the late medieval perfection of it, optimized for the knight in full plate armor.
The shock cavalry of the knights was only possible because horse, rider, armor, and saddle functioned as a unit. Without the right saddle, the famous lance charge wouldn't have been feasible.
That's a detail that's easy to overlook. You think of sword, armor, horse, but the saddle is the connecting element. What particularly interests me about these saddles is the built-in interplay between protection and danger. The side extensions, called ears in the community, support the thighs for lateral stability.
That was essential. When you're charging at an opponent with a couched lance and the impact comes, you don't want to be tipped sideways out of the saddle.
The same goes for the high front plate. Its main purpose was to keep you in the saddle, not to serve as a shield. That's what your armor was for.
Which is completely absent in modern saddles. There's no protective function anymore. You're exposed on the horse.
But here's the catch. All these safety features that keep you in the saddle
also keep you in the saddle when you don't want to be in it anymore.
Exactly. That's the problem. During a fall, the protection becomes a trap. The ears that are supposed to stabilize you can trap you. The high front plate can become an obstacle when the horse falls.
Imagine this. Your horse stumbles at full gallop. With a modern saddle, you get thrown off. Painful, but you land separated from the horse. With a medieval war saddle,
you stay trapped. The horse falls on you.
Or the saddle itself causes the injury. And here we have one of the most famous cases in history.
William the Conqueror?
1087, exactly. The man who conquered England dies not in battle, not from poison, not from disease, but from his own saddle.
At Mantes-la-Jolie, during a campaign against
the French King Philip. William had just taken the town. His horse shied or stumbled over hot ashes, and he was thrown against the front part of his saddle.
The pommel.
Contemporary chroniclers, especially Orderic Vitalis, describe how the saddle inflicted deep injuries to his abdomen. He developed peritonitis. 6 weeks later, he was dead.
That's pretty ironic when you think about it. The very design that was supposed to protect him in combat ultimately killed him.
And that wasn't an isolated case. Medieval chronicles repeatedly report knights who were trapped in their saddles during falls, especially at tournaments, where horses charged past each other at close range.
Although tournament saddles were a category of their own, some had even higher cantles, even more fixation. Maximum protection against the opponent's lance thrust.
But also maximum risk during a fall.
That's the trade-off these riders consciously accepted. You sit securely as long as everything goes well. But when things go wrong...
they really go wrong.
In modern reenactment, this is actually a real concern. Anyone riding with historical reproductions must be aware of this danger. Most events have strict safety rules.
Which is also why historical tournament reenactment is so elaborate. You need specially trained horses, experienced riders, medical backup.
And even then, some risk remains. That's part of the historical reality. This equipment was made for war, not for safety in the modern sense.
The medieval knight accepted that. Protection in combat was more important than safety in case of an accident.
A trade-off that's hard to imagine today. But that's exactly what makes these saddles so revealing. They show how different the priorities were back then.
Protection and risk in one piece of equipment. That actually sums up the medieval war saddle perfectly.
Now we've talked a lot about the medieval saddle. But what about what most riders know today, the English saddle?
That's basically the opposite in design. Flat shape, minimal structure. You have stirrups, knee, no wait, girth, knee rolls, and a flat seat.
And the seating position is completely different. With English hunting or jumping saddles, you sit with your weight leaning forward, knees bent. That's designed for speed and jumps. With dressage saddles, you sit much more upright.
Especially with jumping saddles, that's important. The entire saddle is designed so you can move with the horse. During a jump, you go into a two-point seat.
And the saddle works with that movement.
The padding rests on panels that are ideally fitted to the individual horse. The weight-bearing surfaces lie on either side of the spine, so the sensitive spine itself remains free.
What always strikes me, compared to the medieval saddle, you have much less support.
Because support isn't the goal. The English saddle doesn't want a fixed connection between rider and horse. It wants freedom of movement. That's perfect for dressage, jumping, eventing.
But not for combat. You'd be thrown off at the first lance thrust.
Absolutely. Different requirements, different solutions.
Which brings me to the Spanish saddle. That's, how should I put it? It bridges these two worlds.
In what way?
The Spanish saddle, often also called a vaquero saddle, has elements of both. You don't have knee rolls like the English saddle, but the high pommels and cantles, called borenes in Spanish, provide a more stable position, reminiscent of the medieval saddle.
And that has historical reasons. The Spanish riding tradition was shaped over centuries by
the Reconquista.
Exactly. Almost 800 years of conflict between Christian kingdoms and Moorish rulers on the Iberian Peninsula. That shapes a riding culture.
The Spanish riders absorbed influences from various traditions, especially Moorish and Berber, for over 700 years, from the 8th to the 15th century. You can see it in the saddle, these high pommels and cantles that clearly recall Oriental influences.
The vaquero saddle has a high pommel and a high cantle. That gives you stability without completely trapping you like the war saddle. A kind of middle ground.
And now, a quick word from our sponsor. Feeling curious? Then head over to battlemerchant.com. They've got all sorts of medieval stuff, from costumes to armor and loads more. Totally worth a look.
So English, flat, mobile, little support.
Medieval, deep, fixed, maximum support.
Spanish, solid but flexible.
And the interesting thing is, the Spanish saddle also influenced the Western saddle that we know from American movies.
Through the conquistadors?
They brought their vaquero tradition to America in the 16th century. Mexican rancheros adopted and developed it further. The modern Western saddle with its characteristic horn is ultimately an American adaptation of the Spanish original.
That's this continuity that I find so remarkable. From the Reconquista through the Spanish colonies to the Texan cowboy, it's all connected.
And the English saddle develops in parallel, but from different requirements. In the 16th century, they were still military in character. Stable cantles, wooden frames. But in the 18th century, with fox hunting, it becomes about sport, no longer about war.
And that's why there's this lightness. When you're following a fox over hedges and ditches, you need a saddle that jumps with you, not one that holds you in place.
And today we have even more specializations. Dressage saddles with deeper seats for precise aids. Jumping saddles with flaps cut further forward.
For the two-point seat over the obstacle.
All-purpose saddles that try to do a bit of everything. Every discipline has its optimized version.
But the basic principle has remained the same for centuries. The saddle distributes the rider's weight across the horse's back and creates a connection between both.
Whether medieval war saddle, Spanish vaquero, or English jumping saddle, this core function connects them all. The form may change, but the purpose remains.
And every change tells a story. About wars, about traditions, about what people needed from their horses. If we now take a step back and look at the big picture, what actually connects all these different saddles?
At their core, it's always about distributing the rider's weight safely and gently on the horse's back. That's the central challenge that connects them all.
Exactly. This basic function as a bridge between rider and horse is the crucial element. It must ensure stability for the human and protection for the animal.
And this bridge is more than just a static construction. It must also transmit the rider's subtle signals.
And this connection is more than just mechanical. A good saddle enables communication. The rider feels the horse. The horse feels the rider.
Couldn't you also ride without a saddle?
Of course. Or just with a blanket. That works for relaxed rides. But as soon as you want more, longer distances, speed, precise control,
a saddle is practically indispensable.
And the stirrups. The combination of both has enormously expanded the possibilities of riding. With stirrups, lance combat became much more effective, jumping significantly safer, although high cantles on the saddle were almost more important than the stirrups themselves. The Romans and Parthians managed without stirrups after all.
What fascinates me about this whole development is the
continuity?
Yes, this continuity across centuries. The medieval saddler in the 15th century and the modern master saddler are essentially solving the same problem, with different materials for different requirements, but the principle remains.
Although the materials have of course changed massively. Today we work with synthetic fabrics, memory foam, computer-manufactured saddle trees.
But a handcrafted leather saddle from a traditional saddler still follows techniques that are centuries old. The basics of leather working, shaping, padding.
It's this blend of innovation and tradition that I find so fascinating. Modern materials meet centuries-old craftsmanship.
Absolutely. The saddle is always also a mirror of society. The medieval war saddle represents a world of combat. The English jumping saddle represents the world of fox hunting. And the Western saddle represents the American frontier.
True. Essentially, every type of saddle is a piece of tangible history.
And this entire historical development culminates in the variety we know today.
And today, we have the choice between all these traditions. We can choose the saddle that suits our riding style and benefit from centuries of human experience.
That's perhaps the most beautiful insight. Every saddle we use today stands on the shoulders of generations of riders and saddle makers. They experimented, improved, adapted.
And this process isn't finished. The evolution continues. New materials, new insights into horse ergonomics, new requirements.
But the core question remains the same as it was 500 years ago. How do I create the best connection between human and horse?
That was our look at the fascinating world of saddles, from the medieval warhorse to the modern sport horse. I hope you were able to take something away from this.
If you're interested in historical topics like this, feel free to check out battlemerchant.com. On the blog, you'll find many more articles about history, equipment, and everything that brings the past to life.
Until next time.
Take care.
And so we ride towards the end of this episode. Keep your sword sharp and your mugs full. We'll catch you in the next one.